Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan, and welcome to the show. Well, it's that time of year again for Christmas, and we have a couple of weeks worth of good stuff for you to listen to. We'll start off with an episode of the NBC Cavalcade of America. This is called The Story of Christmas Seals. It's from 1936.
Cavalcade of America, presented by DuPont. The story that will be dramatized this evening on the Cavalcade of America, presented by DuPont, is the story of the Christmas seal. In our audience here at our radio theater is the woman who started the Christmas seal on its way in America 30 years ago, Miss Emily Bissell. We are happy to have her with us, and we would like to have you meet her at the end of our program. As our story is told this evening, we believe you will not only gain a better understanding of the work made possible by Christmas seals, but will make doubly sure that every Christmas card or letter or package you send carries at least one of these stamps. As our overture, Don Voorhees and the DuPont Cavalcade Orchestra bring us a selection of Cole Porter's music from the new motion picture, Born to Dance. Thank you. This evening, the Cavalcade of America brings you the story of a devoted Red Cross worker, her idea for Christmas seals, and the growth of a magnificent campaign for the better health of this country. We take you back to the winter of 1907 in the city of Wilmington, Delaware. Miss Emily Bissell, secretary of the local Red Cross, calls on a young widow.
Good morning, Mrs. Lang.
Oh, Miss Bissell, come right in. I was hoping you'd get here. I got your note and I came just as soon as I could. I'm on my way to a Red Cross meeting.
I know you're busy, Miss Bissell, but...
Why, what is it, Mrs. Lang? Not bad news about Carrie?
No, it isn't that. The baby's fine. All she needed was to get to the country, to have fresh air and better food than I could afford to give her.
Oh, I'm so glad she's doing well, Mrs. Lang. You know, I think the 3 or 4 months in our pavilion will send her back to you greatly improved in health.
I hope so. Miss Bissell, the thing we're afraid of has happened. Oh, the doctor said yesterday that Johnny has one lung affected, too.
Oh, Mrs. Lang, I'm so sorry. Poor brave little Johnny.
All day yesterday, I tried to realize it. Miss Bissell, since my husband died 2 years ago, and my little girl got sick, now my boy, it doesn't seem fair.
Now, you mustn't despair like this. After all, we were afraid of it. We didn't get Carrie away from this house here soon enough.
But he was always so strong. I never thought that he could...
We'll get Johnny out to the pavilion right away. Today, if I can manage it.
Well, that's the trouble. Johnny can't go.
Why not?
The doctor said he couldn't. There's no more room, not a single bed.
Oh, why, that's ridiculous. Why, there may be some temporary mix-up out there, but there'll be a place for Johnny. I'll see to that.
Oh, thank goodness, Miss Bissell. I was sure you'd help me.
Why, that pavilion was started just to help poor people with lung trouble, Mrs. Lang. And it's going to cure Johnny, I know. Now, I'll go right down and see Dr. Wales.
Mom! Oh. Hey, Mom!
There he is now. Oh, Johnny!
Oh, hello, Miss Bissell. I didn't know you were here.
Come here to me a minute, Johnny.
He shouldn't be up, but it's so hard to keep him put.
Miss Bissell, do you know what the doctor told me? He said I'm sick in my chest like Sister was.
Yes, I know, dear. And you'll have to learn to be quiet for a while. That's hard for a little boy, isn't it?
Well, it'd be easier if I could go out where my sister is.
And that's just where you're going. Well, I'd better get started for Dr. Wales' office right now. Goodbye, Johnny. You'll get back into bed now.
I will. I'll be waiting for you, Miss Bissell.
All right. Goodbye, Mrs. Lang. I'll hurry back.
Goodbye, Miss Bissell. Thank you so much.
Determined to see that Johnny is not denied the opportunity of entering the pavilion, young Miss Bissell hurries to Dr. Wales' office.
Good morning, Emily.
Good morning, Joe.
Well, I see by your face that you've heard the bad news.
Well, what is it? What's the matter, Joe?
Oh, the pavilion is closing in 2 months.
Closing? But it can't. What's happened?
Well, there's no use blaming me, Emily, nor any of the 3 doctors working with me.
Oh, well, I'm not blaming you, Joe. But, well, there must be something you could do.
I barely support my own family. Like more of my time than I can afford to charity, I can't follow that with all the money I have.
No, of course not. Oh, you've worked so hard to start the pavilion. It was such a generous thing to do. You taught this city how to care for its sick. Now, if it's simply for the lack of a few $100...
Oh, the lack goes deeper than that. When money is missing for a charity like this, it's only because the public lacks knowledge of the need. So many people consider tuberculosis hereditary and incurable and think nothing can be done about it anyway. So the worst pestilence in the world goes on unchecked.
Pestilence. Yes, it is a pestilence, Joe. I never thought of it just that way. I should have, though, because the Red Cross was organized to help in war, pestilence, and famine. Maybe they can do something.
Well, you're the secretary of the Delaware Red Cross. It's up to you to start something.
But, Joe, you mean you want me to go out and find money for you? To manage everything?
Yes. I've selected you to get this money, and I feel sure I'm right. It's only possible to stamp out a disease when people in general, not just doctors alone, join a health crusade to destroy it.
Well, I wish there were some way to end tuberculosis completely.
Well, since tuberculosis is preventable, there are ways. teach people how to safeguard their health. That's a matter of public education, Emily. So perhaps when you've finished a local campaign, you could start a national one.
You're outlining a rather large program for me, Joe. And all this talk of prevention is too late to help people like little Johnny Lang.
Yes. The thing we have to worry about right now is our local problem. How to care for Johnny Lang and the others. So it's still up to you, Emily.
I can't think how to start going about getting money.
Well, you must have some ideas.
Oh, dozens, but none any good. I thought of fancy dress parties, or a raffle, or tag day. But the trouble is that people are so busy getting ready for Christmas that they haven't time to think of anything else. They're all buying presents and getting off their letters and their cards. And... now, there's an idea.
You thought of something?
Did you happen to see an article in the Outlook recently by Jacob Reese of New York?
No, I don't think I did.
Well, it told about a plan used in Denmark for raising funds for charity. They issued government stamps, rather like postage stamps. And people buy them and put them on letters to help a children's sanatorium. You see, it supports the sanatorium's needs, and it spreads the message.
Stamps. Well, might be something in it.
Of course, the government doesn't run charities here. And besides, we need education more than money in this. Now, let me think. Let me put things together. Pestilence. The Red Cross. Education. Christmas. Joe, I'm getting an idea. A big one.
Well, you decide about it, Emily. You're a sensible, energetic young woman. Any town that hasn't got a few women like you in it might as well go back to grass.
Oh, yes, but you ought to help me decide what...
Excuse me, Dr. Wales. Sam's been waiting 10 minutes to drive you over to that tonsillitis tent.
Oh, all right, Ruth. Emily, I have to rush off. Since this cold wave, you won't find a doctor in town who will have time to help you, but good luck.
Well, I don't know where I'd get money to print the stamp.
Borrow it from somebody.
And I suppose you have to design a stamp before you print it.
Do it yourself.
All right. I will. A holly wreath. The Red Cross. Merry Christmas. That's easy enough. Well, everyone in town will laugh and say I've got some silly notion that won't work. But I don't care what they say. I'll be too much haunted by what a failure will mean to Johnny Lang and the others. Maybe that fear will help me make it a success.
With the financial backing of two kindly friends, which amounted to only $40 and was never called on, Miss Emily Bissell designed a stamp and found a printer who would wait for his money. She wrote to Washington and got permission to use the insignia of the National Red Cross for her venture. On December 7th, the day the sale in Wilmington is to start, she pays an early morning call.
Johnny? Johnny, are you in here?
Oh, Miss Bissell. Sure, I'm here. Monk, where?
Oh, maybe I woke you up. If I did, I'm sorry.
No, ma'am, you didn't. I was just lying here, thinking. Gee, all the packages. They look like Santa Claus.
No, Johnny, these aren't Christmas packages. I'm on my way down to the post office. I've got some signs to put up, some boxes. Look. Look here. Can you read this sign?
Christmas stamps. 1 penny apiece. Issued by the Delaware Red Cross to stamp out the white plate.
That's right.
What's this underneath, the poem? Put this stamp with message bright on every Christmas letter. Help the tuberculosis fight and make the new year better. These stamps do not carry any kind of mail, but any kind of mail will carry them.
Well, that isn't much of a poem, Johnny, but it was the best we could do in a hurry. And anyway, we won't be able to judge this poem until we see what it does for you.
Is it going to do something for me?
That's what I hope. You know, we saw the Postmaster General in Washington. And they're letting us sell these stamps, see? With the Red Cross and Merry Christmas on them. I can sell them right in the post office. Not at a stamp window, but at a booth in the corridor, all trimmed for Christmas.
Yeah, but what for?
To get money. So that you can go out to the pavilion. And so the others can stay there.
Just a little stamp.
Oh, dear. I'm afraid you feel about my plan like everyone else does, Johnny. You think poor Miss Bissell's got a bee in her bonnet.
No, don't think anything's wrong with you.
Fine. That makes me feel better. The other people think I'm just plain... Well, never mind. I've got to go now, Johnny, so I'll just wrap up this sign again.
I'm very glad you came to see me.
I just had an idea for some reason that... Well, that it would bring me luck if I stopped in here. And all day long, no matter how many people walk by these stamps with their heads in the air and don't buy any, I'll think about you and keep on trying.
Mom says you'll do your best.
Johnny, would you like to help me, too? Take one of these stamps, will you?
Sure. Should I tear it off?
That's right. Now, you keep it by you, Johnny. You might say a little prayer.
Pretty looking. Merry Christmas.
If people will only buy them, that's what we'll have. A Merry Christmas.
Emily Bissell quickly found that she was trying to sell stamps to a public unprepared to understand them. But the newspapers were her best helpers. All the Delaware papers played up the stamps. Soon after the sale starts, she goes to Philadelphia and talks there to the Sunday editor of a paper that has interested itself in health campaigns.
I'm sorry I can't use your story on the stamps in our Sunday section, Miss Bissell. But this isn't exactly the season of the year that people want to be depressed. There's no connection between a terrible disease like tuberculosis and a great holiday like Christmas.
Oh, but there is. There is a real connection. Well, when people are filled with goodwill, they want to pass it on. I'm certain I'm right about that.
Well, even if you are, this stamp idea is a little unusual.
You don't have to explain. You think it's silly.
Well, perhaps it'll work. I don't want to criticize.
It won't work, and we have plenty of newspaper space. One of my business friends loaned me two men to prepare news material. Both of them say we must get more publicity if we can, or we can't sell enough stamps.
And I don't think our interest in ending disease is quite the same, Miss Bissell. You're working for a local charity. We're interested in a national campaign.
Yes, but these stamps could be used anywhere. Don't you see?
I'm afraid I don't.
Well, then I haven't explained it clearly. I'm not discouraged, though. You see, we're selling stamps at home. But the stamp is bigger than that. Perhaps the lives of so many people, some of them little children, depend on this. The stamp is a symbol, the banner of a great battle against death.
I wish I could do something. I'm sorry.
Well, I know you're anxious to get back to your work. Thank you for seeing me anyway.
Thank you for coming in. Goodbye.
Good day.
Can I do something for you, lady?
Oh, that office door says Mr. Hodges. Isn't he the one who writes The Optimist?
Sure. It's a good column, too.
Yes, I always read it. I'm an optimist myself. I'd like to talk to Mr. Hodges.
Oh, that's easy. Mr. Hodges likes to meet people who read his column. Hey, just a minute, please. Hey, Mr. Hodges.
Hello, Danny.
Lady out here in the hall to see you.
Why keep her in the hall? Door in.
All right. Come right in, ma'am. Mr. Hodges ain't busy.
Well, I suppose I may as well. How do you do, Mr. Hodges?
Well, please come in, Miss. Danny didn't give me your name.
I'm Emily Bissell of Wilmington, but I won't take up your time. I happened to mention to the office boy that I liked your column so much, and I wanted to meet you.
Well, don't go away. Sit down. Any writer likes to talk with his readers, you know.
I'm a rather low-spirited public right now. I've just been asking a favor of your Sunday editor.
Oh, and didn't he give it to you?
No.
Well, perhaps I could help you some way, Miss Bissell.
Mr. Hodges, did you ever have an idea that was certain was perfectly wonderful and then find out that most people couldn't see it?
Well, maybe you haven't taken your idea around to enough people yet. Is it something you're writing?
Oh, no. No, it's a selling plan for a charity campaign. Would you like to read the outline I've written up about it?
Well, thank you.
I was afraid I'd get tongue-tied with the Sunday editor, so I put my chief arguments on paper. But I used them all and still...
A campaign against tuberculosis, huh? This paper's very much interested in that.
I know. That's why I made the trip up here to Philadelphia. You see, the campaign in Delaware is going well. Club women and the schools and the press are helping. But I thought that if an influential paper was already interested in the subject, we could go far. Isn't my idea bigger than Delaware or Philadelphia? It's the new tuberculosis Christmas seal stamp.
Stamp? Could I see the stamp you've designed?
Yes, I've got some in my purse. There.
Thanks.
I'm trying to place it in the Philadelphia stores, but they're not enthusiastic. If I could just find one person who would agree with me on the possibilities of selling seals, I'd feel better.
You want to find just one person who believes in Christmas stamps? Well, you found him. Pardon me a second.
Danny.
What is it, Mr. Hodges?
Go tell the editor. I've got to see him right away.
What shall I tell
him? Well, I saw the editor, Mr. Hodges.
You saw the Sunday editor. Now you'll see the managing editor. You see, Miss Bissell, we've been hunting for months for a way to dramatize the fight against tuberculosis. And we knew that when we found it, it would be some perfectly simple thing that we'd wonder, why didn't we think of that a year ago? Well, you found it. How many stamps have you got with you?
Why, about 10.
Well, we'll want 50,000 for Philadelphia.
50,000? But that's all we had printed.
Then you'll have to print some more. Hurry back to Wilmington. Telephone me tonight.
Oh, I will. Why, oh, what grand news this is going to be for the people back home. And for Johnny Lang and the others. It's all the Christmas presents they'll need.
See, Mr. Hodges, the boss says, what's it all about? He's kind of busy.
Tell him to put everything aside. We found a way to help stand out tuberculosis.
The faith of a handful of people launched the Christmas seals to end tuberculosis. The first year's sales totaled $3,000. The next year leaped to $135,000. The sale of Christmas seals over the 29 years the campaign has been going on has amounted to $83 million. And the educational results? Tuberculosis has dropped from the first cause of death in this country to the seventh. In every city, there are scores of men and women who have Christmas seals to thank for their present happiness. This year, on a street in Wilmington...
Oh, just a minute, driver. I think I see someone I know going down the street.
You better get in the cab right now, mister. I haven't much time to catch your train.
Why, it is she. You wait here just a minute.
Okay.
Hey, ma'am. I beg your pardon. Aren't you Miss Bissell?
Why, yes, I am. Perhaps I ought to know you, but...
Oh, just look hard for a minute. Of course, I put on about 3 feet and over 100 pounds, but...
Why, Johnny Lang. Why, it must be 30 years since I've seen you. Ah, you don't look any more like little Johnny Lang.
I should think not. I'm as fit as a fiddle. Say, meeting you is great luck. I'm only in Wilmington for a day. Came east on a business trip.
Well, tell me, how did your family make out in California?
We've been fine. Mother's pretty well along now, you know. Mm-hmm. Carrie's teaching school up in Seattle, and...
Fine.
Me... I've got a wife and 3 kids. Just an old married man.
Oh, John, I'm so glad to hear it.
Remember the day you came in to see me on the way to your first Christmas seal sale?
Oh, do I remember? I was never so thrilled in all my life.
And you gave me the first seal for luck.
And if you ask me, John, it was lucky.
It was lucky for me, all right. And every time I see a Christmas seal sale, I remember that it's going to be lucky for some other fellow. I'll bet you're on your way now to the nearest stand to ask how the sales are coming on.
Well, as a matter of fact, John, I am. We hope for a good year. You know, John Lang, you ought to buy some seals.
No, you can't catch me there. I got them in my pocket someplace.
Oh, that's fine.
Honestly, Miss Bissell, I don't know how to express the thanks I owe you personally and the other people who helped me.
The people you're indebted to... were the people who bought seals that first year, John. And we'll never know who they were.
Well, to them, and to you, and to everyone who helped, thanks.
You better hurry, sir. You better hurry.
There's my taxi driver. Reminded me I have to catch a train if I want to spend Christmas with my family.
Oh, well, you run on, John. Don't let me keep you. And give my love to your family.
Thanks.
And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. And good luck to your Christmas seals.
Millions have been brought back to health. Millions have avoided the tragedy of illness. But the work has by no means ended. Tuberculosis still takes more lives between the ages of 15 and 40 than any other disease. The national and local tuberculosis associations throughout the country continue their work untiringly, confident that the American public, which has brought them so far on the road to success, will continue in its faith and generosity. And now it gives me great pleasure to introduce the lady that made all these things possible, the organizer of Christmas Seals as an increasing force for combating tuberculosis in America, Miss Emily Bissell.
I am delighted to be present this evening to hear the story of 30 years ago. I assure you that it is accurate. I have known many young Johnnies and Carries, once ill, who are now leading healthy, normal lives. Children of today are much less likely to be infected because of the educational work of the Christmas seal. It is the great symbol of prevention and cure. It is cutting down the death rate between the ages of 15 and 25. For this year, for the first time, no one under 19 has died of tuberculosis in Delaware. I want to thank personally every one of you who have helped us carry our campaign forward through this interesting dramatic sketch.
Thank you, Miss Bissell. This evening, we salute those marchers in the cavalcade of America whose work makes life healthier and thus happier for all. Any effort to save lives and guard the public health concerns everyone. Let us therefore review the advances that have been made. A baby boy born in 1850 could expect to live on the average about 38 years. Today's child can look forward to a lifespan of 60 years or more. How has this been done? One of the factors in lengthening our average span of life has been the remarkable forward strides of medical and surgical science. Another has been the achievements of chemical research in producing new and better medicines and other products that serve the medical profession. Doctors say that tuberculosis, for instance, can be cured in virtually every case if treated early. One reason the death rate from tuberculosis used to be so high was that doctors, with the methods of diagnosis then known, had difficulty in detecting its presence in time. The discovery of X-ray gave the medical profession an important new tool to aid in diagnosing tuberculosis and other respiratory diseases. By taking X-ray pictures of the lungs, doctors can detect the presence of tuberculosis in its various stages. DuPont research has contributed to this forward step by perfecting X-ray film that enables doctors to get clearer pictures of the human anatomy than ever before. Another important aid to physicians in diagnosing trouble is the group of products known as bile. Is the group of products known as biological stains. These chlorine compounds, when applied to samples of body tissue and the like, make it possible to see, by means of the microscope, tiny organisms such as streptococci that otherwise would not be visible. These stains thus enable doctors to diagnose a variety of diseases in time to check further ravages. Once we were dependent upon Europe for almost all the biological stains we needed, and when this supply was cut off during the war, our physicians and hospitals faced a grave situation. Today, DuPont supplies a variety of dyes for these important diagnostic aids. The DuPont Company also makes chemical ingredients for many of these products that aid in the conquest of disease. Its contributions to the protection of human health give deep and lasting meaning to the DuPont phrase, "Better things for better living through chemistry." The man who had two careers, the interesting story of Samuel F.B. Morse, artist and inventor, will be the subject of our broadcast when next week at this same time, DuPont again presents The Cavalcade of America. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
As Christmas approaches, the kitchen becomes a hive of industry, doesn't it? It's the most fascinating room in the house to the small fry, too, with its warmth and tantalizing odors. But for Mother, unless she's a good organizer, the hive of industry is apt to become a frenzied flurry with everything piling up and nothing going the way it should. This year, more than ever before, it's the wise woman who has planned her menus well in advance with plenty of room for changes, in case she has to, at the last moment, substitute foods which are available for those which aren't. With the celebration of our fifth wartime Christmas, we're very fortunate indeed to have so many foods available. Now, I was speaking to some people the other day who had recently arrived in Canada from England. They were astonished at the luxury of life here. So much food, so little regard for waste. They said it was like coming to a pre-war world. In England, they said, you just didn't dare leave food on your plate. You felt obliged to eat it all up whether you wanted to or not. Or if anyone was looking at you and they saw food on your plate, well, they made you feel like crawling under the table. Well, even though according to our conception at least, our celebrations will be very simple this year, they still require a great deal of planning, to say nothing about the actual preparations. If you haven't completed a Christmas work plan yet, let me tell you how the consumer section suggests that you work it out. To begin with, we will assume that you have the Christmas pudding, mincemeat, and fruitcake made and out of the way, or at least arranged for. Now, why not consider the whole Christmas weekend in your meal plan? Choose those menus for which a great deal of advance preparation can be made, and which are elastic enough to take care of any unexpected guests. A buffet-style supper Christmas Eve is ideal, and easy to arrange, with everyone helping himself. A pass-around fireside tea on Christmas evening is also easy on the hostess, and people usually don't require a substantial supper after a Christmas dinner. We've found that it helps considerably to take stock of your shelves, check your staples, and order anything you need a week before Christmas. That would be by next weekend. Or at the latest, by the Tuesday before Christmas. It means one less thing to have to fuss about later on, and will avoid that maddening last-minute search for poultry seasoning or some other thing which seems to have vanished from the pantry shelf at the crucial moment. You will have probably also placed your turkey order, or your chicken or goose order, whatever it is you're serving for the main course, by next weekend, or will be doing so the first of the following week. Other things which can be crossed off the list early are cranberry jelly. You can make it, pour it into sterilized molds or glasses, and store it well covered in a cool place until needed. Cookies which store well, salad dressings, and so on, can also be made in advance. But I don't have to warn you to hide the cookies well, or they may disappear before the required time. Here's an elastic sort of schedule for Christmas week. Monday should really find you with the details of your week and menus completed, your final shopping list made out, and everything under control. Tuesday, you might complete as much of the shopping as possible, leaving only the perishable foods to be picked up later in the week. Wednesday should see the last of the baking completed. Pastry for mincemeat, tarts, cheese straws, etc. can be prepared, wrapped well in wax paper and stored in the refrigerator, ready to be rolled out and baked at a moment's notice. Thursday, the bread for the stuffing can be prepared. Friday, you can wash the salad greens, prepare the celery, make your carrot sticks, etc., and put them in the crisper in the refrigerator. Or, if you haven't a crisping compartment, a kettle or roaster with a tight-fitting lid may be used and stored in the icebox or a cool place. It will do the crisping job very, very nicely. The turkey, goose, or chicken may be stuffed Friday also, though some people prefer to leave that for Christmas Day, since it really tends to make the dressing a bit soggy. Some pudding sauces may be made the same day or the day before Christmas. Choose one of these that can be made the day before, and so eliminate one more last-minute job if you like. Christmas morning, some of the vegetables may be prepared early, but please don't let them stand in water until you're ready to cook them. No one approves of that nowadays. They lose too much of their mineral and vitamin content. Instead, prepare those vegetables which don't darken on exposure to air, such as carrots, turnips, etc. Then wrap them well in wax paper or clean, dampened towel. Put them in a bowl or pan with a lid and keep in a cool place, preferably the refrigerator, until you're ready to cook them. Of course, we don't recommend keeping fresh vegetables standing any longer than absolutely necessary, even this way, because of the destruction of vitamins that takes place. If you have a plan of your own to follow, you know how much easier it is on you And instead of being a nervous wreck on Christmas Day, you can really enjoy the celebration as much as anyone. Well, good luck with your preparations, and good morning, everyone.
It just wouldn't be the Christmas season on Old Time Radio without a visit to Jack Benny. Here's the Grape Nuts and Grape Nuts Flakes program from 1943.
The Grape Nuts and Grape Nuts Flakes program, starring Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, Rochester, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Say, I bet you don't all know the real meaning of the word delicious, or do you? Well, I didn't until I looked it up. And it comes from two Latin words meaning pleasant and charmed. And if that doesn't spell malty-rich grape nuts, then my name isn't Don Wilson. You're as pleased as punch when you sit down to the big, tempting bowl of grape nuts now, aren't you? And you're certainly charmed with that one and only malty-rich flavor that's sweet as a nut. A rich, distinctive blend of sun-ripened wheat and malted barley. A flavor that just plain hits the spot. And all that wonderful whole grain nourishment you get in grape nuts leaves you with such a satisfied feeling of well-being. Yep, for a real treat, just try a bowl of grape nuts for breakfast tomorrow. You'll find it's a charmer, all right. As you know, Mary Livingston has been off the show for 3 weeks because of laryngitis. So now that she is fully recovered, we take her to her house where we find Mary and her maid, Butterfly.
Gee, Miss Livingston, you sure have pretty hair.
Well, thank you, Butterfly. Ouch. Be careful with the comb you're pulling.
Oh, excuse me. Say, Miss Livingston, was your hair always this color?
Of course. I never bleach my hair.
Neither do I.
Well, I'm glad you told me. Now, Butterfly, comb the ends into a roll.
Yes, ma'am. You know what, Miss Livingston?
What?
I think your hair is even prettier than Mr. Benny's.
Oh, Butterfly, you're just saying that. Anyway, you've never been close enough to Mr. Benny's hair to appreciate its beauty.
Oh, yes, I have. Yesterday, I was over to Mr. Benny's house.
Oh.
He wasn't home, so Uncle Rochester showed it to me.
Your Uncle Rochester has no right to open Mr. Benny's safe. Now, Butterfly, will you get my blue dress out of the closet, please? Never mind. You answer the door. I'll get the dress myself.
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to buy a paper doll that I can call my own, a doll that other fellows cannot steal.
Hello, Butterfly.
Come right in, Mr. Benny. May I take your hat?
Yes, thanks. Here's my coat.
Yes, sir. Shall I take your shawl, too?
That's a muffler. Here. Now, Butterfly, will you tell Miss... Oh, here she is.
Hello, Jack.
Hello, Mary. Gee, you're looking swell, and your voice sounds okay, too.
Thanks. I feel fine now.
That's good. Say, Mary, I brought you a box of candy. Over 100 pieces in it. Here you are.
Oh, thanks, Jack. Just the kind I like. Sen-sen.
Well, I'm... glad you do. You know, it cost me extra to have it wrapped as a gift, you know.
Oh, Jack, you're so nice.
I know. Maybe I shouldn't have given it to you now. It'll make your Christmas present look like nothing.
Well, let's not worry about that now. Come on, we'll go into the living room.
All right. Is there a fire in the fireplace?
No, but we can build one.
Okay.
Gee, I haven't had a fire in here since I've been sick.
Well, there's nothing as homey as a fireplace with a cheery blaze. Here goes. First, a little paper. And throw on some kindling. And now for a log. There must be a smaller log around here somewhere. Let's see. Thanks, Mary. Hey, look. Look, that log came from the tree that used to be in your backyard.
Yes, I know.
Gosh, Mary, look what it says on it. I love Jack Benny. Isn't that sweet?
Yeah, I remember the night you carved it there.
Yeah, it was so romantic. I'll never forget that night if I live to be 40.
Jack, if you...
Don't answer that. I know what you were...
I'll take it. Hello? Plainfield, New Jersey calling? Yes, I'll hold on. Oh, Jack, it must be Mama.
Oh, is she out on parole again?
Jack, you ought to be ashamed of you. Hello? Oh, hello, Mama. Yes, I'm feeling fine now. That's right. I was off the program for 3 weeks. What? Oh, don't worry. Jack's going to pay me. He will pay me. Oh, Mama, he is not. Where'd you ever hear a word like that? That's what Papa calls you?
Mary, tell your mother.
Quiet, Jack. No. Say, Mama, did you get the packages I sent? Good. But I don't want either you or Papa to open those presents till Christmas. What? Papa couldn't wait. He did? Well, Mama, call a doctor. That was shaving lotion.
Mary, what was that word your mother called me?
It starts with an L.
Oh.
Say, Mama, tell me, what's happened to the home lately?
L. Could be liar, louse. Louse isn't so bad, is it?
What? What, Mama? Cousin Harry was made a sergeant? Oh, that's too bad.
What's bad about it?
Last week he was a lieutenant.
Oh.
Yes, Mama, that was Jack's voice.
L. L.
Yes, he's sitting right here beside me.
L.
Mama, stop it.
What's the matter?
You can drop the L and start working on D. Say, Mama, what are you and Papa doing tonight?
D, dope, done.
Oh, you expect company, so you're making a fire in the living room?
Dumbbell, that starts with a D.
But, Mama, you haven't got a fireplace in the living room. Oh, there's a hole in the rug and you wanted to cover it up with something.
Mary, hang up, will you?
Well, Mama, I think I better... just a second, operator. Mama, give my love to... Oh, darn it, we were cut off. Oh, operator, why did you... I don't care if my mother does drive you nuts. It's none of your business.
See, Mary, you see, I'm not the only one that's allergic to your mother.
Oh, Jack, Mama's only kidding. She doesn't mean half the things she says.
She does, too. I never saw a woman like that. She's always hounding me.
She doesn't hound you.
Well, she's got the face for it. And let me tell you another thing. Your mother takes delight in aggravating me. Every time she calls me up, she pans me. And I never say anything about her.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Well, you ought to be. Every time we talk about my mother, we get into an argument.
You're right, Mary. We shouldn't argue. Let's kiss and make up.
Okay.
How is that?
Let's argue.
Oh, yeah? That was all right, and you know it. Now straighten your lipstick.
Oh, you and your wet lips. Every time you kiss me, you're scared.
Now, what do you want me to do, have them retreaded? I skid. You can't say one nice thing. There's someone at the door.
That's all right. Butterfly will get us.
You can't say one thing without trying to be funny.
Oh, Jack, you take everything so seriously. Where's your sense of humor?
Sense of humor? Listen, Mary, you have no regard for my feelings. And in the first place...
Hello, Mr. Benny.
Hello, Dennis. In the first place, I only came here to visit...
Hello, Miss Livingston.
Hello, Dennis.
I only came here to cheer you up because you've been ill.
Well, this is a fine way to do it. Just because I pull a gag on you once in a while, you hit the ceiling.
I hit the ceiling?
What's going on here?
Look, Mary, when you had laryngitis, I was a constant visitor. I'm the best friend you ever had.
Do you mind if I sit down?
No, go ahead.
No, sit down, Dennis.
You know, Mary, I even brought you a box of candy, and what thanks do I get?
What do you expect for a box of scents, and a kiss for every piece?
No, Mary, but the least you can do is show your appreciation.
Oh, you're having an argument.
Dennis, why don't you please be quiet?
Gee, everywhere I go, there's an argument.
Oh, where have you been, Dennis?
Home.
And Mary, as far as I'm concerned...
At my house, it's louder.
Dennis.
They ought to be breaking it up by now.
The argument?
No, the house.
Dennis, we're not having a fight. It was just a little misunderstanding, that's all. Now, Mary, let's not argue in front of the kid.
You're right, Jack, and especially about such a silly thing. I'm a dope.
Well, I'm a dope, too.
You want to know something?
What?
It's nothing to be ashamed of.
You should know.
Thanks. Well, I guess I'll run along now.
Wait a minute, Dennis. What'd you come over here for?
Oh, I forgot. I came over to visit Miss Livingston.
You did? Well, sit down and stay a while.
Okay. Well, guess I'll run along now.
Dennis, you just got here. What's that package under your arm?
Oh, I made a record of a song and I wanted Miss Livingston to hear it.
Well, that's fine. We'll play it later. Oh, Butterfly, see who's at the door.
Yes, Miss Livingston.
Oh, it must be Rochester. There's my new car out in front.
That yellow one? Why, it looks like a taxi cab.
Well, it was, Mary, but it's the only thing I could get. Anyway, I converted it strictly to private use.
Oh.
If it weren't for the color, no one would know it used to be a taxi. Oh, hello, Rochester.
Hello, boss. You better hurry. The meter's running.
Well, turn it off, silly. It's only us.
Why, Jack, if you're using that taxi for your own private use, why do you have a meter on it?
He never knows when he's going to give a friend a lift.
Well, Rochester, it pays to be nice.
It pays him.
Oh, that's not the reason at all. Anyway, Mary, it's not a bad car, is it?
It looks all right.
It rides smoothly, too.
Yes, sir.
Did you ride in it, Dennis?
30 cents worth.
Dennis.
That's my raise. $5 worth of free rides a week.
Listen, kid, I give you those rides because... I give you those rides because I like you. I'm not in business with that taxi. I don't haul people around.
Oh, boss, come now.
Rochester, I told you, I only give my friends a lift home.
What's so funny, Rochester?
All of his friends have trunks and live at the Union Station.
Rochester, stop making things up. And you better hurry or we'll be late for the super cheese. I mean, stop mixing me up.
I know what you mean, boss, but we gotta go Christmas shopping.
Oh, that's right. Let's get going. I want to do my shopping while the stores are still loaded with stuff. So let's...
Oh, Butterfly. Butterfly, there's someone at the door. Butterfly, where are you? Oh, well, I'll answer it myself. Well, of all people...
I locked myself out.
Ha, ha, ha. in, Butterfly, and get Mr. Benny things. He's leaving.
I got him. Never mind. Come on, Rochester. Let's go. So long, Mary.
Goodbye, Miss Livingston.
Goodbye. I'm gonna buy a paper doll that I can call my own. A doll that other... Oh, Dennis, I forgot you were still here.
Yeah, I just put my record on the phonograph. Would you like to hear it, Miss Livingston?
Sure, I would. Go ahead and play it.
Okay. Say, Miss Livingston, would you like to... Oh, well.
What, Dennis?
Never mind. Let's sit this one out.
Yes, I'd rather just listen to it.
Turn the corner so fast.
Don't worry. Boss, these taxicabs can really take it.
Rochester, I've told you 1,000 times this is my own private car now. It's not a taxi. Anyway, I'm going to have the color changed. It's getting to be ridiculous. Rochester, you're coming to a red light. Watch it.
I see it, boss.
Hey, Bud, mind if I share this cab with you?
I'm sorry, mister, but this ain't no...
Driver, no one's asking you. Certainly, mister. Hop right in.
Okay. Maple Avenue, driver.
Nice day, isn't it?
Yeah. How far are you going, buddy?
Oh, I'm going much further than Maple Avenue. So you pay me and I'll pay the driver. That'll save time.
I wish he'd step on it. I'm in a hurry to get home.
You are?
Yeah. I don't want to miss the Fred Allen program.
What? There.
Gosh, boss, how could you reach the brake from the back seat?
Never mind. This is where you get out, mister.
Why? What happened? What did I say?
Get out. Get out.
You can't put me out of this cab. Hey, driver.
I'm sorry, mister, but you'll have to get out.
Oh, I do, hey? Well, my name is Brown, and I'm going to report you to the president of this company.
Mr. Brown, you may not know it, but you were thrown out by the president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, and star of stage, screen, and taxicab.
That's telling them, Rochester. Let's go. Gee, it sure is crowded in this store. I wish I'd have done my Christmas shopping early like I did last year. You going to buy any gifts in here, Rochester?
No, I already did my shopping.
You did? Where?
At Saks Central Avenue.
Now, let's see. I want to get something for my girl, Gladys Zabisco. But I don't know what.
Why don't you ask the floor walker?
Yeah. Oh, mister. Mister, are you the floor walker?
If I'm asked that question again, I'm going to smash somebody right over the head.
What are you mad about? I just asked you if you were the floor walker.
You see this carnation in my lapel?
Yes.
Or what do you think I am, a long stem?
Then you are the floor walker.
Of course. I'm not rugged enough to be a customer. Now, what can I do for you?
Well, I'm interested in something for my girlfriend. What would you suggest?
Well, what does your girl look like?
Well, she's kind of thin and scrawny, and her hair is sort of stringy. But she really has a nice personality. She has a little turned-up nose. And she has two ears. And they,
Well, everybody's got two ears.
On the same side?
Rochester. That's the way she combs her hair. It's a large bun.
Well, I don't know what to suggest. Why don't you try our harness shop?
Oh, don't be so smart. Come on, Rochester. I'll find things myself. Let's go over to this counter here. Pardon me, miss. Is this the perfume department?
No, this is the cold cream counter. Can I smear something on you?
No, thanks. I'm not interested in cold cream.
You know, we're short of help, so they split my week between cold cream and hot water bottles.
Oh.
3 days a week I'm greasy, and the other three I'm overheated.
Well, I feel sorry for you.
You know, for 20 years, I was behind the perfume counter. Nothing but perfume for 20 years. Perfume, perfume, perfume.
Well, that's too bad, Miss,
Just call me Stinky.
Well, look, miss, I have to buy something for,
Hey, boss, look. Here comes Mr. Harris.
Where? Oh, yeah. Hello, Phil.
Hiya, Jackson.
Hello, Chester.
Hello, Mr. Harris.
Doing a little shopping, Phil?
No, I came out here to see Don Wilson.
Don Wilson?
Yeah, he's playing Santa Claus here this year.
No kidding. Well, how'd he get the job?
It wasn't easy. He had to take off 20 pounds.
Gee, can you imagine Don being Santa Claus and talking to all the little kids, telling them about... Hey, wait a minute. Have I got a wonderful idea?
What is it, Jackson?
Let's pull a gag on Wilson. Now, Phil, you go over to the boys' department and get dressed up like a little kid.
Yeah?
And I'll go down to the women's ready-to-wear and dress up like a woman. See, I'll be your mother.
Okay, and I'll be the mean widow kid.
Boy, will we fool Don. Rochester, wait for me out in the car. And, Phil, I'll meet you in front of the toy department.
Okay.
Gee, I wish Jackson would hurry up. I feel like a dope standing here dressed up like a little kid.
Oh, boy, look what Jackson's missing. Hiya, babe.
Shut up, it's me. Now, come on, let's fool Don. Come on, we'll go over and fool with... Remember, I'm your mother.
Now, gather round, children, gather round, and I want to talk to each one of you in turn. Now, let me see. Who's next?
My little son is Santa Claus.
Oh.
My little son is Santa Claus.
All right, madam. Now, where is your little boy?
Now, where is he? Oh, Clearwater. Clearwater.
Doody, doody, Santa Claus. Doody, doody, Santa. Here I is, Mommy.
Isn't he a darling?
Yes, he's a cute little rascal.
Now, Clearwater, tell Santa Claus what you want for Christmas. Go ahead, don't be mad.
No, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. No, I don't want to do it.
Now, Clearwater track saddle. Tell Santa what you want.
No, I don't want to do it.
Clearwater, take your foot out of your mouth. There. Now the other one. That's better.
Now, little boy, tell Santa what you want for Christmas.
I want some grape nuts flakes.
Grape nuts flakes?
Yes, my mommy and my dad, well, he tells me that they're toasty brown and they're sweet as a nut.
That's right, my smart little man. And they're a whole grain cereal.
You're absolutely right, Santa.
Oh, how cute. Look at that nice little boy sitting on Santa Claus's lap. Such pretty golden coils he's got.
Yes, that little boy happens to be mine.
I'm not talking to you.
Now tell me, Sonny, wouldn't you like to have a bicycle?
No, I want a grape nuts flakes because they're delicious, nutritious, and not rationed.
That's right, and what else?
Well, there are basic seven foods, the kind of food my dad would eat, wants me to eat more of.
Well, you certainly are a good little boy. You should be proud of him, Mrs. Clapsaddle.
Oh, I am. Now, Clearwater. Clearwater. Say goodbye to Santa Claus.
Goodbye, Santa Claus.
Goodbye, Santa Claus.
Goodbye, Phil. So long, Jack.
Oh, darn it. He knew it. He knew it all the time.
What are we going to do now, Mommy dear?
Oh, shut up, you little jerk. Come on, let's get out of here.
There's a certain phase of the effect that you can't take it with you. But tonight I'm going to tell you about something you can take with you and should take with you every morning of your life. That's the zippy up-and-at-em feeling that you get when you eat the right kind of breakfast instead of one of those sip-and-run affairs. Breakfast is the stoke-up meal, you know, the time when nutrition experts say we need at least one quarter of our day's nourishment. Well, for two grand-tasting stoke-up foods, let me just mention grape nuts and grape nuts flakes. Because the experts also agree an adequate breakfast should include a cereal with whole grain food values. And that's certainly grape nuts and grape nuts flakes for you. Both are cram full of all-around whole grain nourishment, including iron, niacin, vitamin B1, the morale-building vitamin. And good, say, wait till you taste that zesty crispness, that distinctive nut-sweet flavor. So eat a good breakfast, do a better job. And for extra swell eating, make it tempting, nutritious grape nuts or grape nuts flakes.
Well, folks, that finishes another program, and we'll be back with you next Sunday night at the same time. Meanwhile, my cast and I want to send Christmas greetings to all of you. To all of you here at home and to all of our boys and girls in the service here and abroad. Good night, everybody.
Grape nut sweet meal. Yes, you bet. The swellest new hot cereal yet.
Get grape nut sweet meal. It's a prize in the big new package, jumbo size.
A thrifty treat, you'll all admit, but the first delicious taste of it.
Yes, quick cooking grape nut sweet meal is rich and hot and brown with a grand roasted wheat flavor, luscious full-bodied texture, real whole wheat nourishment. Get hot grape nuts wheat meal in the time-saving, money-saving new economy-sized package. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company. KFI, Los Angeles.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.